Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Listening to 100 Words or Less with Ray Harkins.
Hello, supporters of independent music. Thank you for downloading this podcast and spending time with me and my guest this week, who is Jesse Barnett. He's the vocalist from Stick to Your Guns, plays in Tradewind, also plays in Ways Away. He is a man about town in regards to music, but then he also runs a very, very cool community-oriented bookstore called All Power Books here in the greater Los Angeles area. And I'd like to call him a friend. I've known Jesse for, oh my gosh, I don't know, the better part of 15 years. I actually worked with Stick to Your Guns on technically their second full-length release when I was over at Century Media Records. And I've just always really enjoyed him as a person. We care about each other deeply, and I think this conversation reflects it because I actually had him on the show, gosh, I want to say episode 5, 6, very early days of this. So I dare you to go back and listen to it in the archives. But so this is a more philosophical, like, where have you been the last 10 years, even though I know where he's been, but we get into it, and we talk a lot about the social media hate that was poured onto him recently. I don't think he's discussed it in many places because, you know, frankly, there were a lot of people that were just looking for clicks, just looking for, you know, salacious headlines or whatever it is that people do. But Jesse was, felt comfortable enough to where we talked about that in depth. But we also talked about the band's new record, Spectre, that just came out. It's a very, very good release. I think they're 7th full length, if I'm not mistaken, which it may be more. I'm just like trying to operate off of memory. But they're doing the damn thing. And we actually talk a lot about Europe as well, because the band has increased in popularity over there over the past, I would say, 7-8 years or so. It's been pretty awesome to watch that. So anyways, the most important thing, very wide-ranging conversation. And Jesse is a dude that I love to have conversations with. Let's talk about some favors you can do for me, because that's what I'm asking for. First of all, tell your friends about this show. That's the best way, word of mouth, marketing, all that sort of stuff. I'm not, you know, doing any paid marketing for this show. So that is the best way to spread that general awareness. You can also leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, or you can leave a rating on Spotify, whatever platform you listen on. Those are the biggest two. That's why I named those. That would be awesome to do that. You can always email the show, 100wordspodcast@gmail.com. I love to receive feedback, emails, whatever it is that you are interested in corresponding with me on. I am there for it. And let's just talk to Jesse. I am excited because I'm going to a few shows coming up. Went to, actually, you know what? I'm going to talk about a show I went to recently. I went to the Sunday Drive Records and New Mortality Zine showcase here in Southern California at the beautiful Program Records Skate Shop. I was like, Program Skate Shop Records. I don't know which one to list first, but Program is great because they are now a venue that everybody is generically aware of and looks forward to playing shows. Like I spoke to a few bands that played on the Saturday that I went to, and they were just like, oh yeah, like this is the place to play in Southern California now. It's awesome. But I have to give a shout out to both of those record labels. They're doing really cool work. You need to check out Sunday Drive Records. You need to check out New Mortality Zine. They are putting out not only great music, but they have a great aesthetic, great DIY, independent-minded releases. They also are just really good humans. So shout out to them for putting on a really, really cool show. And shout out to the people at Program and all the people that bring those shows there, because I love to be in small, sweaty rooms with people, because that's why we do this thing, right? Anyways, let's talk to Jesse, who is a great human being and is also a vocalist for a band called Stick to Your Guns. Let's go. Now I understand more of us than them. Detached from what I've known, and now I've flown above who I was in this place. Nothing goes to waste. What's left? Like I was saying before I literally pressed a button to record, it has been 10 years since we spoke on the microphones. And it's funny because I actually was listening to that episode a couple of nights ago, and it's funny because both you and I like sound legitimately younger. And I know that is kind of obvious to say, but like, we just sound like, you know, not little kids, but just like, oh, that's cute. Like, there we are. 10 years ago.
We were just little insignificant children then. Now we're all grown up and super serious.
Totally. And I appreciate the fact that you were like, oh, sure, I'll do this on your fifth episode where you're going to have -4 people listening to this, but it's cool. It's fine. I want to hang. And this may be kind of big to start off with, but you know, 10 years is obviously a decade, is a long time. What do you yourself, like if I were to, you know, put you on the spot, which I literally am right now, in the past 10 years, what would you say the biggest shift in yourself? Like whether it's the way that you deal with other people, whether it's, you know, because there's a lot of maturity that happens in a 10-year span. So I don't know if you have the ability to reflect on that, but I'm asking you to.
Well, I mean, we're talking about like literally from today, this moment, back 10 years.
Exactly.
Right. That's honestly, and it might be the answer you're expecting, maybe not, but like the pandemic for sure, like without a doubt. And I think a big reason for that is like, I mean, you know this, you've been in bands that tour. It's like if you're a band that decides to like pull the pin and like go for it, like, all right, we're just going to be like road dogs, which I definitely think that Stick to Your Guns would fall into that category. You get into such a momentum that's awesome, but it can also make things seem like a blur. And the fact that the pandemic didn't even slow down to a halt. It literally just stopped everything. I was literally in the middle of a tour. You know what I mean? Like when it happened. So that was like a huge, at first, an insane relief, because I felt like I already had felt like for a while, like we had just been overdoing it. And then, of course, I was overdoing it even more, touring with like Tradewind and Wish You Were Here and the other projects that I have. I spread myself even more thin than Stick to Your Guns kind of does. So it was a relief at first, and then it became a whole introspective thing on like, who is Jesse? You know what I mean? Like not like who, like, cause I think for a lot of people, I'm like the singer of Stick to Your Guns. So it's like, sometimes I like think that I'm that as well. And so I feel like I had maybe lost track of like, or like, who am I outside of this thing? And so that was like a huge, and I think like kind of understanding, or at least starting to engage with that, really helped me in the way that I do interact with people, or at least helped me recognize the way that I interact with people sometimes, or, you know, I felt like it challenged me to make myself a better version, I guess, without sounding too corny.
No, I think that, I mean, yes, it sounds corny, but it's the truth. And I think that it is interesting when you are looking at this, you know, treadmill that you step on in regards to everything you're talking about, from you being constantly active in one way, shape, or form with your, you know, your main chick versus your side piece. But just joking aside, but just that idea that you're in that constant motion and you don't have, when you're on tour, you're basically in that kind of, you know, it sounds dramatic, but survival mode, where you don't have, the only times that you do have by yourself are meant to like literally decompress.
No, exactly. It's exactly. It's almost like, you know, I've used this kind of analogy a lot, but it's almost like your life as like, almost as if your life is like a credit card. Almost. It's like the time that you have off, it's like, that's the time you have to like pay for all the aggro shit you just did to yourself, that you just put yourself through, you know what I mean? So it's almost like this like constant, like, okay, run yourself ragged, like squeeze every drop out, and then just like lay down and try to get as much of it as you can back, in between tours and shit like that. And obviously, you know, to kind of go on the same analogy, it's like the more touring I was doing and the more kind of like, I won't say unnecessary just because I love doing it, so it all feels and seems necessary to me, but I'm sure some of it wasn't necessary. So it's like, you know, the more you spread yourself thin with unnecessary things, instead of like taking the time to like let yourself like refill on your life's, you know, juice or whatever, you go into the next thing empty, you know what I mean? So, and that can wear you out.
Sure. And I never thought about it in regards to growth, because there is that level of stagnation that happens with people who do step on the treadmill of playing in bands and, you know, the lifers that many of us know. And not to say that if you are a lifer that you can't evolve as a human, because that's not the truth, but there is less room to do that than when you are just simply participating in what most people would constitute as a normal life, because those are the times in which you actually can sit down and ask yourself, like, what is it that I want out of this? You know? And I mean, same thing could be said about working just a normal job or whatever, but yeah, it's the growth can sometimes be stagnated because of that.
No, for sure. And I think it's important to ask yourself what you want out of it, because to me, it's like, if I'm going to have this incredible opportunity to be able to make a living off of like this incredibly difficult thing, although, you know, it's a part of me, you know what I mean? It's like, I recognize my position and what I get to do for a living. And a lot of the times it's incredibly difficult. And sometimes, you know, it's like, you know, I even joke, you know, me and Tom always joke with each other, like, oh, let's just go get applications to Target. But we because sometimes the shit can just be incredibly like can run you ragged and make you feel like, oh my God. But I'm super grateful to be able to do that. And I kind of recognize it. And I think you always kind of have to periodically take the inventory of like, whoa, this is really cool. And, you know, to drive the point home even just a little bit more, it's like you and I kind of grew up in the same rooms, granted at different times. And it's like, I remember when I was standing at a show at one of our many venues that we used to have in Orange County, like I would be there being like, I would do anything to be up there. You know, and I got to remember, like, oh, not only did I achieve what like young Jesse, who you know, was this super passionate kid, not only did I achieve like what young Jesse wanted, it's like I think I exceeded it in a lot of ways. And when you get into that kind of like, I don't know, like hypersleep mode, you know what I mean? When you're just like flying along, you can forget that sometimes. And so it's like, I try to consciously check myself and remember like, yo, this is cool. You know what I mean? Regardless of all the bullshit that you got to deal with sometimes, it's definitely been worth it. And I think moving forward, I kind of realized like that 10-year-old to like 14-year-old Jesse, like to me, that's when I was the coolest I've ever been. So now my life's goal as I'm going to be 35 this year, my life goal now is just make sure what you're doing is making that kid proud.
Right. Make the younger version of yourself like stoked on what you're doing.
would he be fucking pumped? You know what I mean? Like, would he be pumped on what I'm doing? Yes. Hell yes. Maybe not everything. And honestly, sometimes I use that, you know what I mean? Where it's like, you know, I know younger Jesse wasn't so confrontational as I am now. So sometimes younger Jesse goes like, bro, chill out. Who gives a shit? You know? And it's like, I need that, you know?
Totally. Yeah. I do like that. I like how you put that because, you know, normally it's maybe putting a parental voice or a brother or some other family member that is in your head of like the co-signing experience. That's like, oh, if I make this person proud, and I just like the fact that you've encapsulated that into your younger self. It's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. Because honestly, too, it's like, even though my mom is probably the person I've been most honest with in my life, it's like I've for sure lied to her. So it's like, who knows you better than, you know what I mean? Like literally, yeah. Your younger you is like the only one who has like seen it all and knows everything. So it's like he's gonna call you on your shit. You can't trick him. You know what I mean? It's
like right.
He's seen it all. He's been there. He's you. You know.
Right. So, yeah. Yeah. That voice in your head has always been there and always will be there.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. And it's interesting too. I was reflecting on this where, you know, even though ostensibly you are young, I know it's old from a sort of punk rock hardcore idea of things, but the band has existed for, you know, close to 20 years and you are for sure an old band now and you've made it work and you've made it very successful. And it's interesting that I'm sure that you are touring with bands now who saw you. It's like, oh man, I never thought we'd be on the same stage as Stick to Your Guns. And I know that can happen pretty quickly in punk and hardcore, but how does that kind of sit with you feeling like you are the older kid on the block now still doing it?
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's amazing. It's,
it's a weird thing. Cause like I myself view you as younger, which you obviously are. But then that notion of just like, oh, Jesse's like an old head. So like now I'm like old head. And then, you know, whatever, Brian from Knock Loose is like a child, but like, I'm just like, how is this all transpiring? Cause we're all not that far in age difference. Know, it's just weird.
Here's the thing though. It's like you're in the clear because I'm in that weird, like, you know, when like people say like the people who grow their hair out, they're always like, yeah, I'm growing it out. And it's in that awkward in between stage. Like that's kind of where I am. And you are in the like the varsity group who's always just going to be held up as cool. And then the younger kids are obviously cool because they're the ones in control now. Right. So I'm not quite varsity yet. You know what I mean? I'm like in that awkward in between stage where people are like, what you're, oh wait, Stick to Your Guns. Like the Move fan. They're still doing, you know what I mean? It's like, no, I definitely am being modest. That does happen a lot. It does happen a lot where people are like, dude, I never thought in a million years I'd be on the stage. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And it's just like, holy shit. All right. I like it. You know what I mean? I think it's really cool. It's a funny idea to think like someone popped on one of our records and was just like, this makes me want to start a band. Like that's always funny. It's not that I don't believe it, you know, it's like, cause the exact same thing happened to me. So it's like, you know, I did that. So I know what that's like to do that, but it is a very rewarding feeling for sure. And I think the different for me so far, I have been okay with being old in hardcore and metalcore. Like I've been okay with it, but simply because we still care about what we're doing. You know what I mean? Like, I think where it really starts to go downhill and it kind of starts to have like a sad look is when it's like, when you get to that wrap it up stage, because it's like the people on stage don't care about playing anymore. The people writing the songs don't care about writing the songs anymore. It's just like one of those like, oh, well, we always did it, so we'll just keep doing it. You know what I mean? And I'm sure you've known a million of those bands. And I think that even like for a band, like let's to flip it on you really quick, for a band like Taken, it's like you guys always just toured exactly what you wanted to do. So it's like, I feel like you always kept it insanely special. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I mean, when things do become habitual, either because you don't feel like there's any other path for you in your life, and that can go back to everything that we're talking about with the self-reflection and, you know, like there's no shame in, you know, quote unquote, joining the real world as long as you still care about all of the things that you do care about, because that's, sure. You know, that's part of growing up for many people. But that idea exactly, and so many of us have witnessed that idea of like, why is this band actually doing this? Is this just because that's like all that they know and they don't really have any other creative ideas to bring to the table? And like,
That's what I'm saying. It's like, I know, like, if tomorrow you were to be like, hey, Taken's going to go write an EP, it would be because you guys want to do that. It's got nothing to do with like different life paths people take or anything like that. It's more so just like if you're going to keep doing it, like give a shit about it. You know what I mean? That's why terror is terror. You know what I mean? It's like, they care about terror. They care and you can see that especially when they play live, but you can also hear it in their records. Like, this is a band that fucking loves hardcore. It doesn't matter. Nothing else matters. Like, they just love hardcore and they definitely live it. So it's like that, like seeing stuff like that, you know what I mean? Like, kind of Vogel for me is like from singer to singer, he's that, like, he's my North Star a little bit. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
Every year he keeps going, I'm like, there's another year I can keep doing it. You know what I mean? Like, straight up. And I know that there are people who are obviously like older than Scott who are even still doing it. But for me, the connection and relationship I even have with Scott also plays into that too. So it's like, you know what I mean? Like, he's always kind of been my compass on that, you know?
Yeah. I like how you put that. And something that's interesting, I find with bands, not specifically within maybe the hardcore scene, maybe we could broaden it out to the Warped Tour scene, even though the Warped Tour doesn't exist now, but just there is the temptation for bands of that certain level from drawing a decent amount of people and, you know, being an active touring band to kind of soften their harder edges in order to build a bigger tent for people to engage with your music. And in my own opinion, you guys seem to have done that logically. Like, there hasn't been all of a sudden your next record is like a butt rock record or whatever, you know, there may be elements of it, and not throwing shade that your direction, but just there's elements of like a musical evolution. I know that is a very conscious effort of you guys to be like, okay, we don't just want to write the same record over and over and just be this, you know, the Move hardcore band from Orange County. You know, how do you, I guess, envision that growth, you know, from record to record? Is it as simple as, yeah, we just don't want to completely recycle ourselves? Or what's the conversations that go either in your head or obviously in the practice rooms?
I mean, I think it's also just coming, like, you, I feel like, you know, stick to your guns fairly intimately. And so it's like each member, like, you know, our personalities, I feel like, well enough to like know also like our musical taste is very eclectic as well. Each member having their own, we have a lot of overlap, but a lot of members definitely go off and venture off into their own territory where everyone else is like, that shit's garbage, you know what I mean? or whatever. And I think that the way we keep it interesting for ourselves is to try to push that boundary, I guess. Like, I'm trying to make it not sound so like I'm like we're some sort of like metalcore pioneers, because that's not the vibe at all. It's like, for me, it's almost like the approach for me, really, when it comes down to it, is almost like the Death by Stereo approach. Like, when you listen to If Looks Could Kill, or if you listen to what's the one after that?
Day of the Death.
Yeah, day. What is it?
Day of the Death, I think.
Yes, it's that purple one. I forget which one it is. Which,
sure.
Which is arguably probably one of my favorites. But anyway, it's almost like that. Like you listen to Ephraim and you're just like, does this band have 10 singers, or is this guy just fucking crazy? You know what I mean? It's like, that's kind of always been, like, at least in a spiritual sense, the band that like stick to you, like that, at least me personally have like, resonated with. I like the fact that they will do anything and they'll go anywhere and they'll, you know, talk about the subject matter that needs to be talked about. So that was always like a brave, thing, even when I was younger, and the shows were like these ass beating shows. And then Death by Stereo was on there because they were friends with everybody or whatever. And like, you have this band that just sticks out like a sore thumb. Like, I even knew back then, like, damn, that's brave. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
To do that. But they were just so like, yeah, in all honesty, they were probably like harder than all of the fucking hard ass bands that were on the show. You know what I mean? But you know, that I was always just like, damn, that's fucking cool. And Death by Stereo has played a huge musical impact, especially also like bands like Ignite. You know what I mean? And for example, Our Darkest Days, it's like, that record was like, they got away with writing a rock record so easily because I feel like they did it kind of how you described Stick to Your Guns doing it. You know what I mean? Like in a logical sense, more so than like all right, we're just going to do this just because. It's like, it's almost like they felt they always had that on the horizon for them.
Yeah.
Where I think Stick to Your Guns is a little bit more ADHD about it. We're just kind of like, this is cool. Let's see if we all like it and we can write something cool to it. Let's just see if we can get away with it, you know?
Right. I appreciate the Death by Stereo comparison, because I didn't think of it in those terms, but Death by Stereo is schizophrenic by nature in regards you know, one song could be like completely different. Like there's no real through line on each record besides the fact that, you know that Ephraim is singing and it'll be melodic yet heavy or whatever. But right. I do like that idea that you guys can also throw a lot into a blender and then out comes this aggressive thing, but then there's elements of it. Cause I think a lot of it too also has to do, frankly, with the ability to play that stuff. Cause I think what probably bumps people out is when you hear this record where it sounds so either overproduced or it just doesn't sound like the band can pull it off live in any capacity. Sure. And you guys have always, I think, kept that in mind, that you're not just like, all right, we could do this, but we probably can never do this live. So we're not going to be able to do that.
It's interesting you bring that up, because that's like a huge fucking pet peeve of mine when I'm in the studio. And it's like, I understand where producers are coming from, where they're like, it doesn't matter. Just like, you know, it doesn't matter if you can do this live. Like we're not here. This is a record. This is a studio album. You're in the studio. And I feel like that has always been the argument that I've gotten, but then I'm just like, yeah, I understand what you're saying, brother, but like, I'm going to have to go and do this later. And I'm telling you right now, I'm not being like insecure or like falsely modest. I'm just telling you right now, I can't do that. You know what I mean? It's like, I might be able to do it like once or twice in the studio with you right now when the conditions are perfect. But I'm telling you right now, on day 19 of a 52-day tour, I'm going to already be gassed and this is going to be difficult for me to do. And so I feel like I've always had to fight for that mentality. You know what I mean? The mentality of just like, hey, can we, even though, yeah, it would be sick to have like a 15 piece orchestra at the end of this part, like let's ease it up. And honestly, normally those ideas are generally mine, you know what I mean? But like, I try to find that medium between like wanting to explore and also wanting to keep it like realistic, you know?
Right. And also, I think the heaviness that you guys still employ, even when you are not being technically heavy from a musical sense, like maybe it's the lyrics that you are putting forth or just the general mood of it, there's still that air of what Stick to Your Guns has always been kind of underneath it, as opposed to, you know, you guys taking a big musical swing and it's, you know, you're doing a ballad that really just has no teeth to it whatsoever.
No, sure. Exactly. I think that's always been, I think my general rule has always kind of just been like, as long as it's genuine, I think you'll be all right. You know what I mean? Like you're never going to be able to like please everybody. Of course, everyone knows that, but it's like, there's no way to avoid like the pushback on a new record. There's just no way to avoid it. You know what I mean? And so it's like, I think if you start thinking in those terms, like, okay, what's the safest move? Like what can we do to that won't get a bunch of like people saying negative things about us? Then you're kind of already cooked at that point. But I think it's important not to like really allow that to dictate the general direction of what it is you want to do. As long as like what you're doing is genuine, you know what I mean? As long as you're not like, quote unquote, as we say in hardcore, swinging for the fences. And that's like say that when like a hardcore metalcore band's going to like try to like move up into, you know, mainstream stardom or whatever. It's not like we're trying to like write a rock song or whatever for the sake of doing it. It's just like, we wrote a riff and that kind of led to one thing. And all of a sudden at the end, we're kind of left with this like weird thing that we haven't done, but we were at least authentic in its making. You know what I mean?
Okay, it's time to talk about rockabilia.com. And that is the place where you will find your one-stop shop for so many different pieces of band merch that you will not even be able to fit it all in your digital cart. That's a joke. Obviously you will, but you can use this code 100 words or less that gets you 10% off your entire order. They have over 500,000 items. They stock all of your favorite stuff from bands that your mom would like, your dad would like, your brother, your sister, your friends. I don't care what it is. They pitch a very wide tent and will be able to sell you exclusively licensed merchandise. And the reason I say that so slowly and deliberately is the fact that bands get paid from this. This isn't some sort of, you know, pop-up big cartel store or whatever. This is the real deal. Bands license it, sign off on the designs, Rockabilia buys it, and then sells it directly to you. So rockabilia.com, awesome, awesome company. Love working with them. And use the promo code 100 words or less, 10% off your entire order. Thank you very much, Rockabilia.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. In my late teens, early 20s, I was burning the candle at both ends, like playing in a band, going to shows like almost every single night of the week. And I had friends and family being like, yo, you should chill out. Like, you know, you're just not only exhausted, but not giving the best version of yourself to me, to others, to people I was in relationships with. And I wish that someone would have been like, you know what? Hey, you should think about therapy, because I did that later on in life and it helped out tremendously. That is why I love working with BetterHelp. If you are thinking about giving therapy a try, BetterHelp is an amazing on-ramp for this. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. And if you do not vibe with the therapist for whatever reason, you can switch it at no additional charge. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and boom, you're off and running. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ray.
On that same point, when do you feel like you, I guess, recognize that? Because there is definitely, I mean, you have enough of a track record as far as your, you know, the output of your releases. Like, you guys are a fairly prolific band. When do you think you kind of notice that in your head, being able to turn off, like, I can't care about the, you know, public's opinion in regards to the way that our music is going to go? Was that, I guess, earlier? Was that sort of mid-band career, or are you still learning?
No, I'm definitely still learning, but it's not so much. How do I say this? I feel like I've grown confident enough in who I am as like a songwriter. You know what I mean? And I hate, mm-hmm. It's like, we're writing metalcore songs. And so I never really like to be like, oh, I'm a songwriter, but you know what I mean? Like I write other kinds of songs too. Like I've been in the studio a lot, and I feel like that's like my territory. That's where I feel like I'm kind of like in my element. And so the more my confidence has grown in that aspect, all of the negative shit kind of just gets like, I don't really care about that kind of stuff anymore. You know what I mean? Now to flip it, in a live aspect, that's where it's harder to, kind of just be like, oh, who cares? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
when you go play a show and you're playing like 1,000 cap room and like 400 kids come out, it's like, that's always a weird feeling. Cause it's like 400 kids is amazing. That's awesome for a show. It's just not in a room that's appropriate. So you walk out there and it's like, you looking out at this big empty room and it's like, you really have to have the mindset to be like, just rock the shit. Like it's fucking completely sold out. You know what I mean? Who cares? And that was harder to learn. And I feel like that's been probably the thing I've been most proud of learning, is just like, just go and do your thing. You know what I mean? Like, remember that these are the songs that you wrote and that you love. So just go play the shit. Who cares? You know what I mean? Like,
do
what you can while you're out here. But yeah, I definitely care a hell of a lot less than I used to.
Sure. And this is kind of random. I was going to ask this later, but I think it's appropriate to bring up now, where, and correct me if I'm wrong, and this is going to sound so stupid, but like, you don't use in-ear monitors, do you?
No. So I do now. And
okay.
And, that has like helped me immensely. And okay. I always make the jokes too, because like, we didn't start using them until Europe, when the shows like really started taking off for us there. You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
We would do a US headliner and we probably draw like 350 kids all over the US. And it's like, hell yeah. But then, you know, 2 weeks later, we're flying to Europe and all of a sudden it's like, oh, where's the show? It's like, oh, it's here. And it's like, wait, this is 1500 people. And it's like, yeah. And it's sold out. It was like, whoa, what just happened? You know what I mean? It's like, we weren't we weren't expecting it. So anyway, we started, that's when I was like, okay, maybe, you know, it was actually George who convinced me, get in-ear monitors. And I always made the joke. It's like, once you're big enough to play venues where the monitors are amazing, that's when people start getting in-ear monitors. It's almost like the bands playing VFW halls need in-ear monitors because there's no monitors anywhere. You know what
right.
I
mean?
It's like you can't hear shit. And so I always thought that was funny, but
yeah, it's like the reverse. The
monitors are amazing. Yeah. It's like, why would I need these things? But anyway, yeah, I'm on them now. For sure.
That's cool. Cause I was wondering, the reason I mentioned that is because I know that there are definitely people, especially when it comes to, you know, hardcore bands singing and screaming and all of that sort of stuff. Like there are people that have a certain level of loudness in regards to their vocals, especially when it comes to recording. And, you know, you have to know how to regulate yourself to not just, you know, one song into it, be like, all right, cool. Well, I'm done. And you're like, well, you got 13 songs left in the set. Like I can't do that. But you've always had, from what I could tell, like, you know, a pretty powerful voice. So that makes it even harder to regulate. And so I was just curious, like when that became part of your, you know, vocalist journey, as it were.
Yeah, sure. Interestingly enough, it was on a tour that I was doing where I had a lot of free time off before it. And I almost didn't use my voice like at all. I remember it was like, I had about like 3 months off, maybe. Shit, I can't really remember. But anyway, I had an extended period of time off. And then I went into this Parkway Drive tour that we had. And halfway through, we had to cancel the tour because I was having so many vocal problems. And so I came home and I went to a vocal doctor. I had been going to like ear, nose, throat doctors. And they would like do the thing where they stick that like camera up my nose and it would go down into my throat and they would like look around and shit. But they wouldn't be able to see anything. And so it was always just like, God, what the fuck is going on? And so I went to an actual vocal doctor and she was like, oh, those things don't work. The picture's blurry. The camera's like horrible. She's like, I'm an actual like vocal cord, like singer doctor. So I went to her because she was a specialist. She stuck this like foot and a half metal. It was horrible. Anyway, it was this thing that went straight down my throat. I had to like position myself in such a way where like my throat was like completely like open, you know what I mean? And it was just like straight down.
Right.
And so she like stuck this thing down my throat and was like looking around and like having me like look at the screen through the corner of my eyes. And like, I was looking at all my insides and shit, but maybe too much information. I apologize.
No, it's good. I love it.
But yeah, it was crazy to see. And I was starting to develop like some like early signs of like getting like vocal polyps or something, which can,
you know,
once you start going down that road, that's a bad road to be on. But she was letting me know, she's like, that the vocal cords are a muscle, which is like, I guess I should have known that for doing this thing for 15 years. So because I asked her, I was like, well, should I stop? She goes, no, if anything, you should do it more, but you just have to do it correctly. It's like going to the gym. You know what I mean? It's like, if you go to the bench press 400 pounds, but you never bench press before, you're going to hurt yourself. And that's ultimately kind of like what I did when I came back on the Parkway tour. I went so hard after having so much rest that I just like my shit just, something happened. So
yeah.
I got a lot of vocal rest. And then honestly doing things like I do weekly band practices with Ways Away here in LA. And it's like that kind of shit. Like I feel like has made me, I feel like I'm in the best vocal health I've ever been in my life. I feel super strong, you know what I mean? And so it's like, it's, you know, funny enough, singing more, but also being conscientious about what I'm doing has made me a stronger singer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. I appreciate the walking through that idea. Cause I think it is, so many people just look at that idea of, you know, being a vocalist in a hardcore band of just like, oh, dude, all you do is yell. I mean, that's like a very gross oversimplification.
Sure. I mean, they're not wrong though, too.
No, they're not wrong, but it's just that the idea of this being a muscle and you exercising it is only going to help you perform and last longer beyond that as well.
Right. Exactly.
The, speaking of the fact, I mean, like you brought up Ways Away, like, I mean, you're a maniac because you participate in a lot of different projects, you know, Tradewind, Wish You Were Here, Other People Records. And clearly there's a through line between it all. Like there's, you know, the DIY, you know, punk and hardcore mentality, whether you're playing that style of music or not.
Right.
how do you feel like they all play together? Is it just the fact that you want to participate in all these things and you can't say no, or is it, you know, is it something else that's motivating you?
Yeah, I think, honestly, I don't know. I think from like a, if I was to look at it from like a, from like a analytical sense, I think it has a lot to do with like, especially the older I get, I start to see it a hell of a lot more. Like my generation of person who kind of has this like can't sit still mentality, like the half job Bob, as Chris calls it, half job Bob generation, where it's like we like to start things and we're not always the best at like following through or finishing them. But this, you know, starting a project is always really exciting, but I feel like I've done a fairly good job at seeing things through, you know, like you said, I have the label and I have all those other projects, but for all the projects that I do have, there's, you know, 20 failed ones that lay in their wake. So,
sure, sure.
I think it just has a lot to do with like, you know, we kind of grew up with like schizophrenic food and schizophrenic, like, you know, cartoons and like, you know, like, the you know, the computer really took off when we were kids, and then like, you know, you could have all this music on an iPad. It's just, you know what I mean? It's like technology really started moving at such a fast pace, and when we were young and our brains just started speeding up and developing all of it. And I think that might have a little bit of to do with why I kind of am the way that I am. But definitely all my projects are like an extension of me and my own personality and kind of how I view the world. And so I feel grateful that I get to express myself not only one way, but like, I don't know, six different ways.
Sure. That's right. What the world needs. Yeah. Right. all these different outlets to get, you know, just different versions of Jesse out there.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, shut the fuck up already. Jesus.
Right. I thought two was enough, but three. Oh my gosh, dude, calm down. Yeah. Sure. And so with the idea of, you know, touring, like there is clearly a different level that you are at in regards to, I mean, not only touring here in the States, but touring in Europe. And I mean, I know that you obviously tour in, you know, fans over here in the States. And what's your relationship with touring now? I know it's fresh because we're talking about the global pandemic existing and there was no touring for 2.5 years. But how has your relationship evolved with touring to where you're at now?
Yeah, I don't know. It's fucking hard. And I know we were all trying to decide on this last run where we like, is it just because we're like, it's like the first real one back and we're just trying to get our legs still, or are we old, or is this just harder now? And honestly, it might just be a mix of all of it. Mm-hmm. I guess the honest answer would kind of be like, it's a little too early to say. But I do know that, like, you know, slowing it down has always been like a top priority list item for Stick to Your Guns. And I think most, if not all of the band feels that way. It's just, you know, maybe it's too high up on the page because then, you know, we can't see it anymore. You know what I mean? But like we always forget to take that part into account, but I'm hoping this time we do it, because honestly, I, you know, not to get into the, like the politics of like the music industry, it's just, you know, you have so many bands touring all the time, you get oversaturated markets and, you know, all that kind of shit. And it's just like not fun for anyone, you know what I mean? But at the same time, it's like touring is the only way a band makes money. So it's, you know, it's pretty rational logic to think the more you tour, the more money you're going to make. But, you know, at the same time, you're kind of like in a weird way, like deflating your band at the same time, you know? And so honestly though, it's like, you know, if you tour too much, people are going to be like, all right, Jesus, we fucking get it, you know? But it's, you have to kind of walk that sweet line between like being that very thin line between like making sure you're not just like beating it to death, but then also like, you know, you got to make money too. You know what I mean? Like literally there's people in our band who have other mouths to feed and mortgages and all that kind of shit. So it can be a difficult relationship to balance. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly. It's like, yes, we need to tour, but is this tour going to be the one that all of a sudden gets, you know, 20% less the next time we come through as far as ticket sales are concerned? And then that will be the, you know, self-perpetuating cycle down the road of, well, we can't tour anymore here. So no, like,
sure. I mean, that's only one aspect of it too, which is a massive aspect, if not, you know, one of the biggest, but there's also the aspect of like, are you going to burn yourself so much that you just don't even want to, like, you know what I mean? Like, are you going to just going to, you know, there's been certain tours where I'm like, oh, we're not surviving after this. You know what I mean? Like, this.
Right. Right.
And I think we've had too many of those, honestly, if I can speak frankly, like, I think Seek to Your Gods has had too many of those moments on too many tours, that it's kind of turned us into more of a dysfunctional unit than I would like to admit sometimes. But I would like to think that, especially after the pandemic, like, hopefully lines of communication between members have gotten a little bit more, have gotten better. And you've worked with me, like, you've worked with me for many, many years. Like, you know, I think I'm pretty sure you could probably name all of like my weaknesses if you were like my boss, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
If I was trying
sure.
to get a job from you right now, you'd be like, bro, don't.
Yeah. This is not the role. this is not the role for you, Jesse. I think you're better suited over here for that. Yeah, no, I understand. No,
but you know what I mean? So it's like, I'm very self-aware of how difficult of a person I can be to deal with. And so, you know, but anyway, you know, it's a long way of me trying to say the road can wear people out and it can wear relationships thin. And so you got to make sure you're taking care of it in that way too. You know what I mean? And like, you know, I try to fight for days off for multiple reasons, for our brains, but also for my vocal rest and shit. You just kind of do your absolute best to try to make sure, especially when you've been a band as long as we have. If you're 20 years old and you're listening to this and you're in a band, just go tour forever.
Right. Never stop. Like, yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But like, once you start getting into that 20 year area, it's like, okay, you're going to really want to make sure you kind of like, step a little lighter and make sure you're talking to everyone and make sure that everyone feels listened to and heard, and you're taking everyone's shit into account. That's something that I can forget sometimes because I get so zeroed in on a vision that I can sometimes forget, oh fuck, there's other people involved in this thing, you know? So, that's been a big learning experience for me, but either way, it's, you just want to make sure you don't overdo it.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm excited to talk to you about Evil Greed. What are they? They are an online merchandise purveyor based out of Berlin, Germany. But here are the things that make them special. Well, first and foremost, they give you, the listener of this very podcast, 10% off your first order by using this promo code 100WORDS. That's the number 100WORDS, 10% off your entire order. So what makes them special? They are a very carefully curated roster of bands and labels that they sell stuff for. They don't just welcome anyone and everyone in. We're talking about bands like Nails, Power Trip, Russian Circles, Chelsea Wolf, Emma Ruth Rundle, Deaf Heaven. And they work with record labels like Sgt. House, Closed Casket Activities, Triple B. The thing that I like about them is that they act like a record label. They act like a tastemaker where it's like, yo, if you're working with Evil Greed, that means you are of a certain variety, whether it's just this cool artistic heavy music, like they have it really dialed in and they ship it fast to you no matter where you're located. In the US, no problem whatsoever. They'll get it to you lickety split. So again, use the promo code 100WORDS that gets you 10% off your entire order. You're supporting the band. You're supporting a independent owned business. That's not even a word. You get what I'm saying though. I love what Evil Greed does. Carefully curated roster based in Berlin, Germany. Use the promo code 100WORDS, 10% off your order. Now here's the rest of the show.
Similarly related, where the fact that you as a person, your stature from a, you know, numbers perspective, people paying attention to the band, people paying attention to, you know, Jesse as a personality. And I don't mean to over inflate that, but just, you know, that's the way that people perceive it, especially because you have clearly crossed over to, you know, not just being a quote unquote hardcore band. And, how have you had to personally either navigate that or adjust your own, the attention that is paid to you? And like you were talking about at the very beginning of just like not buying into, you know, I am Jesse from Stick to Your Guns, and like trying to find that route to it. Cause I'm sure you've had many of those moments where you're just like, I just wish like, why do you really care about what I say? Like what's so important about me or whatever?
No, sure. That also might just be like a bigger cultural thing as well, where I just feel like that's, I don't want to say everybody, I don't want to generalize, but it's just like that seems to be kind of like, especially now I've had to learn how to navigate it a little bit better with kind of how much of a minefield social media can be. And so, you know, obviously, you know, yeah, I definitely run into it, especially as someone who is as like outwardly facing like a socialist as I am. Like I have to remember a lot of things. and that's
yes,
just to say the least, you know what I mean? And so I don't know, like it definitely comes along with the territory. I guess the thing that confuses me the most is, you know, there are a great deal of people who get upset at me over political conversations I have had or things that they think I think or whatever. But these are all things that I learned at hardcore shows. And that's really right there in that moment. I'm learning now. I'm seeing the age gap, the age divide. You know what I mean? Like, Ray, when you were going to shows when you were younger, I'm sure you would walk into a show and see a table of zines that have Anarchy A's on them, that have Hammers and Sickles on them, that have like the Animal Liberation Front shit. Like, you know what I mean? It wasn't such a radical thing, you know, at least in hardcore, it wasn't, you know what I mean? Like we knew,
right. Correct.
We knew that the politics were radical, but in a hardcore show, you could talk about just about anything you wanted to and have discussions and so on and so forth. So that's the part that I guess if people want to gripe over something that they think, there's really nothing I can do about that. That's just the internet. Kind of like, you kind of just have to like keep your head down and just like roll with the punches on that. Cause once the internet gets a hold of something and says, this is what it is, then there's not really much you can do to combat that. But you know, people getting upset at me over thinking that socialism is a good thing is always, especially hardcore kids. Like that's the part where I've always just been like, wow. Okay. So yeah, here's the divide. You know what I mean? It's like, I feel, and I always told myself I was never gonna back in my day, but honestly though, it's like that wasn't such a radical thing. Like that wasn't when we were going to shows. It's where I learned it. It's where I learned the whole thing. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's weird to see the scene where I learned this thing kind of not turn on me. That's too dramatic, but like for people not to understand, like, no, this is what this place is for. Or at least it's what I thought. Now it's in the hands of new people. So it's up to them to kind of decide that. But
yeah,
I don't know. There's been an injection of aesthetics that I think has not served our music world well.
Sure. I see what you're talking about, especially in the idea that once things, I mean, now that this scene has been able to exist for a longer period of time, you know, whatever, over 40 years, if we're talking like early 80s and, you know, the DC scene and stuff like that, now it's at the point where the tent has been built for so many different people to pop into what it is that you guys do, but maybe not have a deeper connection to a more independently minded scene, even though you would maybe expect a person to interact with Stick to Your Guns and be like, oh, I wonder else what they're into or whatever. But maybe there's less of an appetite for that. And then especially what you're talking about, being able to trace the line back to, oh, yes, like, you know, of course you would buy a vegan brownie next to a, you know, communism pamphlet. Like, that's of course. Like, that's just what you'd see at every show. But yeah, I see exactly what you're talking about.
But I also, you know, kind of to your point earlier of like, you know, I've always kind of, I take a great deal of pride in this now. we are a gateway band. You know what I mean? Like we're the weed of fucking hardcore. You know,
right? Totally.
Genuinely though, it's like we take Warped Tour kids, we get them on Stick to Your Guns, and then before you know it, they're just like, you know, selling their Stick to Your Guns shirts on eBay because they're, you know, they're all locking out kids now. You know what I mean? And it's like, but that's genuinely like what I take pride in that. I like that. I want to introduce people to this world. And I hope that, like, you know, I hope hardcore can at least view us in that regard, because it would be dishonest for me to just pretend like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, Minor Threat, Black Flag, Stick to Your Guns. I don't understand the difference. You know what I mean? Like that would be dishonest. But at the same time, it's like what you were saying, like you look at someone like Henry or you look at someone like Ian and like they're still that same kid. And that's almost like the ethos I was talking about earlier, where it's like, I think now I just want to make sure I'm making that fucking goofy kid who really wanted to do nothing but like make his friends laugh and like be nice to people. Like making sure he's proud is going to be the way forward, while also, you know, causing trouble for dickheads along the way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Not being afraid to pull your punches when you see something that is not kosher by your eyes, where it's like, this is, I know the way that I would react to this if I was a younger, you know, if I was a 14-year-old experiencing this, sure, I would say the same thing, except yeah. So I totally get what you're saying. The something that I've also found very cool and interesting about your band is the fact that, like you were mentioning, once you started to play shows over in Europe and that entire continent started to really embrace you guys, more specifically certain countries. I mean, like I know Germany does really well for you guys. Right. And, you know, it's been really heartening to see because, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but that's definitely a hardcore band's kind of retirement plan.
It 100% is. 100%.
Yeah.
Like, and I feel like we kind of went up into that like cool stratosphere level of like where AF lives and where Sick of It All lives and where all those bands can go literally forever and make money, you know?
Right. Totally. Like you can, yeah, you can pop in, do those festivals, you know, every year and then be able to use that to either sustain yourselves or obviously be active over here in the States. But I'm sure it's difficult for you to not just pinpoint it, but kind of figure out why you guys were able to go up to that level. Was it just the fact that you guys hit it so hard over there for as long as you did? I mean, I'm sure it's a combination of a lot of different things, but do you think about that at all?
Yeah, all the time, because a lot of people ask us advice because they kind of see it. I think 60 Year Guns, you know, it's in a lot of aspects, Stick to Your Guns is kind of like not the guinea pig band, but like we were the band that kind of was like that made other bands go like, oh, well, if Stick to Your Guns can do it, we can. You know what I mean? It's like, right. I don't think it was necessarily meant in like a shitty way or anything. I think it was just meant more so just like, I think that it was just kind of like, we just seemed like a band full of goofballs who didn't really like necessarily get caught up in the business with shit. So they were like, oh, okay, if they can do it, then like almost like we made it look kind of like easy or whatever, even though it wasn't at all. Because it was, right. It was, I think it was a culmination of two major things. The first of which being getting like going over there constantly, you know what I mean? And I think we loved just being over there and seeing the world and like experiencing these new places. So we didn't really give a shit if the show was going bad or not, because it was at the end of the day for us, we were just like, we're in Europe. This is awesome. But Europe can definitely be a very difficult place to tour as well, as I'm sure you know. But, and then the second thing being we got like the cosign, you know what I mean? Like we did our first tour over there was that Hell on Earth branded tour. And it was like Walls of Jericho, and that was on that one. And then the second time we went over there was with Terror. And then it was, then we were on like one of those MAD tours. That's like Hatebreed, AF, Sick of It All. You know what I mean? It's like, and I think right. That kind of like, you know, I even remember Roger from AF being like, yo, like Stick to Your Guns is like, they're carrying the torch of the young kids. And I think that kind of, we brought a younger kind of kid. You know what I mean? Like there wasn't so much division between what a metalcore kid was and what a hardcore kid was back then. You know right. What I mean? It was,
You guys were definitely that bridge, not only from an age perspective, but just the idea that you started to draw people. And so the older bands wanted you to draw a younger crowd. And then because of that, there was that symbiosis that happens where these, you know, the old guard was handing that torch to you guys, where it's like, yeah, these guys are legit. Like, we vetted them. We're good.
Exactly. That's honestly what it was. That's probably a better way to say it. That's not so sensationalized. It's like, they vetted us and we're kind of like, they're with us. They're cool. Like, it was like that, you know what I mean? It wasn't like a big grandiose thing or whatever, but like, and I think that also what that did was like the older crowd kind of was just like, who maybe didn't even fuck with us. Maybe they were just like, this sounds too crazy, but like respect. You know what I mean? Like, it was
right.
It was kind of like that vibe. And so I think that also really helped, along with us just like beating the hell out of every little village we possibly could, you know?
Right. Totally. Yeah. Hard work. And then timing in regards to that definitely helped. Cause there,
huge.
Right. Cause there was that era of the, you know, late 2000s, you know, early 10s, where those bands that you were talking, you know, Agnostic Front, Sick of It All, like, they still drew a massive amount of people, and they still do. But there was that younger crop where it's like, yeah, there's only so many times Parkway Drive can tour Europe. Like, we need more. We need more choice, you know?
Sure. Exactly. And that's kind of what I say. That's what I say a lot, because it's like a sad truth where like being in a band is kind of a war of attrition. Because I used to say, like, all you got to do is be kind of good. And as long as you can last long enough, eventually, like, your moment will happen. You know what I mean? And it's like, I've seen that happen so many times. And it's like, to add another layer to that, it's like, stick to your guns. Like, and this, again, this isn't me being false and modest or whatever. It's like, objectively, when, you know, those early days of Stick to Your Guns, like, we were a straight up bad band. We were not good. We were not good on record. We were not good live. Like, we were just bad. But we just had like a thing that people resonated with for whatever reason. And we were also able to stick around because we were all like high school dropout kids who all had jobs. So we were able to like, you know, do whatever we needed to do to try to just continue down the road. And then eventually someone was like, fine, we'll take you on tour. And then it kind of just snowballed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's true. Well, I mean, I think it's a common joke in the music industry of, you know, what's the hardest part about being a band? Staying together. It's the truth. It's so stupid, but it's absolutely true. Where it's like, I don't care what style of music you play, just getting more than one person in a room like that, you already complicated. So yeah, it's very true. It is a war of attrition.
A lot of the times, like, and I've seen this happen to other people, and I never really take the time to think about it. It's like, sometimes you can just end up in a band with people who you don't even know if you like them. And then all of a sudden you're in this like 5-year relationship with this person that you don't even like as a human being. And I've gotten really lucky that that's never happened to me. And you know what they say, it's like, like, I'm probably the guy for everyone else. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. You're like, I love everybody. They're like, yeah, we tolerate Jesse.
It's yeah, exactly. I'm like, honestly, band's sick. Everyone gets along. And it's like, yeah, it's probably because I'm the fucking guy that united them to hate me. You know what I mean?
Right. You're like, the band stays together because I am so incredibly difficult to work with. It's awesome. Yeah. I got blinders on. It's good. We're good. We're fine. We're fine.
It's amazing. They'll coup my ass one of these days.
Yeah, they're busy, you know, holding auditions secretly, you know, on MySpace, so that way no one has any visibility into it. So it's perfect. Yeah,
exactly.
Two last things I want to hit on was the I'd be remiss if I did not bring up All Power Books, because I think it's not only is it incredibly special what you have been able to do in regards to community resources and completely backing up your politics within that, and then the fact that you were doing this in the middle of the pandemic. It's one of those things that I'm sure that anybody viewing it on the sideline was just like, what the hell is Jesse into? Like, what is this? I don't understand. Like, you know, like a free bookstore that's like giving out food and medical supplies. Like, and this could be a difficult question for you to answer, but what has it meant to you to kind of put that into action?
Yeah, I mean, I always, you know, I think, you know, for as long as you and I have known each other, and it's like, one of my earliest memories, and I think it honestly might have been the day we met, was when it was in the smoking section of Chain Reaction. We were just talking about propaganda or whatever. And so, you know that I've always kind of been on the politically left side of things, even if back in those days, I didn't fully grasp the concepts. I kind of just knew a vague idea of like, yeah, this is the side that believes that like we should probably take care of the world and each other. So that's where I want to be. And so, yeah, I mean, I've always been kind of able to express that aspect of myself, through Stick to Your Guns, but like, it was a completely different thing when I got to express it like in a material way and not just through like songs, I guess. And it's been an amazing learning experience, honestly, and seeing the way that I have an intimate knowledge about the way things work, like certain systems and the you know, the corruption of our social welfare system that we have in California, but also just all over the country. And kind of you're met with so many terrible things. You know what I mean? And every day you have to hear like horrible, horrible things and witness pretty difficult things to witness, but it brings people to, it has brought people together in a way that I never thought was possible. That is so, deeply profound to me that it almost like, you know, this isn't even shitting on Stick to Your Guns, but like, you know, I don't know, when I'm at all power, I feel like anything's kind of possible. Like I have that young kind of feeling that we've all kind of gotten like too bitter to have as we get older, of like, I can change the world, I can accomplish anything. And like, the more people I meet and the more we're able to do and help each other, it's this, I don't know, it's given me in a world that I was definitely feeling hopeless in, you know what I mean? Even though I might've been on stage preaching hope, I think that if I was being honest with myself, I felt pretty hopeless and overwhelmed by it all. And getting in touch with my politics in a material way like this, and being able to express it in such a forum as the bookstore has empowered me in a way that I think I was missing for a while. And so it's to me the greatest thing I've ever done with my life. And I can say that when I get to the end of my life, I will have done all that I can to try to leave the world a better place than when I got here. You know what I mean? And that brings me a sense of, that makes me happy. It makes me happy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that really shines through in, you know, even as something as simple as social media, it is profound to watch a person land at something where it's like, yeah, like I was meant to do this, as cheesy as that sounds. It's like, yeah, no, I'm stepping into this.
Right. And I think that's the whole, you know, the whole point too, is like showing to community togetherness, but also like, we want to try to have some sort of political education, you know what I mean? And it's not like, I don't want to make it seem like we help with strings, you know what I mean? Like, you have, you're like, okay, yeah, we're going to give you groceries, but you have to, you know, read this passage from Mao's Little Red Book, or, you know what I mean? It's nothing like that. It's indiscriminate. We help indiscriminately. I mean, unless like you're like a Nazi or something, you know what I mean? But, you know, that's the whole point. And it's in the, I think the most amazing thing that I've seen is the way that people who we help have then come back to help us. You know what I mean? It's all I care about is trying to empower my community. And it's a really difficult time for people right now who can't afford their homes or can't afford to feed their children. And we deal with that a lot. We come in with like, and it sucks because it's not, people come in and it's not that the fact that they're asking for food, that they don't have any food to feed their family. That's the most heartbreaking part. It's the way in which they come in with such shame. They're taught to feel so horrible, like they got themselves into that position and they let their family down and they let themselves down and they're worthless. And all we're trying to do is let people know that, hey, this is like a systemic issue. You know what I mean? It's like, sure, like a lot of people can make the wrong mistakes that put themselves in difficult positions, but the system is set up in such a way where that is meant to happen.
Right. It's the outcome that is, the cards are, you know, stacked against you, whatever metaphor you want to use, it's, right. It is not a surprise that you ended up here, and you shouldn't wear that as a, you know, as a mark of shame. That's just like,
exactly.
Oh, here. Like, yeah, we were almost waiting for you. We're glad exactly. We're here.
Really, really, really. That's what it is. And I try to tell them, like, no, I get my groceries from our distros too. You know what I mean? It's like, it's life is fucking difficult on me as well. It's like, you know, the pandemic made it such a way where it's like, I'm 3 months behind on rent and I'm trying to keep up with my bills and do my thing. It's like this economic system. It's like, yeah, there are people in different varying levels of like poverty and things like that. But it's like, that's not the point. Isn't to be like, oh, how much do you have? How much do you have? Okay. Well, you guys can't help each other. How much do you have? How much do you know? It's like, we're all in this kind of this group together. And I think that's what the pandemic did too, was kind of put that under a microscope and kind of showed people that society is actually organized in this way, that society isn't random. You know what I mean? Like it's organized in such a way to where a lot of these problems that everyday people are facing are meant to happen. You know what I mean? Cause those billionaires who have all that money, their money doesn't mean anything if we also have that money. You know what I mean? It's like the whole economic system is based on the only way for them, the insanely rich, to have anything of value is if we don't have certain things. And so, yeah, I think that's just like talking with people and getting them to see these things and trying to get them more involved in their community. And that in turn gets them involved more politically. And yeah, it's been a beautiful project. Sorry.
Yeah. No, that is exactly why I brought it up, because I think that it is a project that I think is special. And I think that because you have the platform that you do, being able to not only share your political beliefs and, you know, all the landmines that can be stepped in regards to that, you just being able to show this purest form is, I think, like you said, empowering, because at the end of the day, all you're trying to do is help people out. So, yeah, I think
exactly. And I think people can see what my politics are through my actions. Yeah, we can get into the weeds about it if you want to, but it's like, there's no point to do that. Like, I'm just trying to help people and myself. You know what I mean? It's like, this is also selfish. It's for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's not just, I'm not some prophet, or I'm not like an NGO leader. You know what I mean? I'm not like this. I'm involved in a political process that involves me. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. Like, I'm another person, you know?
You yourself, you wear your politics on your sleeve. You wear your emotions on your sleeve. You're a very out there person. And I know people engage with the band because of that in many different respects. But I know that there are people that like stick to your guns, and then the moment that they understand that you are a political band is like, oh my gosh, like, won't this guy shut up or what? It's just like, in the same way that people are surprised that Rage Against the Machine is a political band. It's like, right. Are you kidding me? Like, what's wrong? and I know you can't control who gets into your band or who gets into your art, because that's the Faustian bargain when you put it out there. How have you had to kind of navigate that personally as the band grows larger and introducing more and more people into this, and they might like your music, but then, you know, they hate who you are or what it is that you espouse, even if it's just something as simple as like, take care of other people. How have you navigated that?
I mean, it's been like a turbulent relationship, just because I don't always, like you said, it's like, I a big thing I'm working on is just making sure that when like I'm feeling overwhelmed or anxious or things like that, that I don't react poorly. And I think a lot of the times, given how many things I have to think about in a day because of how much I have going on, and again, that's all self-inflicted. Someone could say something to me. Two people can say the exact same thing to me, but on different days, and given what I have going on one day versus another, I could react in two completely different ways. And so I guess my thing that I have had to try to learn is like, just try to keep it cool. And as corny and as dad as this might sound, it's like, I can kind of only control the way that I react to things. But at the same time, it's like, I'm never going to turn down like trying to have a principled discussion with someone. But a lot of the times I can take the bait on people who are just trying to like poke at me, you know what I mean? Like, and like push my buttons. And I've kind of always had like a policy of like, you know, how do I say it? It's like, you come to me to say something that you're hoping I get upset about, and then I get upset about it and freak out at you, and then you're all like, wait, why are you being so mean? Like, I never understood that. You know what I mean? But at the same time, it's like, I just have to understand, like, yeah, this isn't going to benefit your life in any way. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to change any minds here by trying to engage in, like, a conversation about, like, you know, the Red Army or whatever. You know?
Right. Like, right.
Dumb bullshit people want to try to talk to me about. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, I don't know. Yeah,
they're right. There's no, this is not the time or the place, either on social media or, you know, 5 minutes after a show. Like, there's no ability to have a nuanced discussion about this. Like, if there's a time and a place for it, then so be it. But these avenues are not the way to engage with this.
Yeah, because it's also like, you know, especially when I come out and call myself a socialist or a communist, it's like, you know, there's a lot of tricky history to navigate. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm a Marxist, right? And so I try to have a historical analysis about things, and denying those wouldn't be Marxist. And so it's like, what you do is you try to give those things context, and you try to understand why those things happen, so that, you know, when, should you ever be in a position to where you have a democratic hand in organizing society, unlike the society we're currently living in, unless you know where previous projects went wrong, you're not going to know how to avoid those mistakes. So I try to be level-headed about things. And it's like, I that's why I hate arguing like communist history with people, because it's like, not everyone is coming from the same like historical context. They probably have a very propagandized view of whatever it is that they want to argue about. But it's like, even if I did think like the horrible thing that you're saying to me is true, which most of the time, almost all of the time is untrue. Like I said, a lot of people like to get upset at me about things that they think that I think. But it's like, what is me thinking this thing? How, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if you were aware about the like Ukraine, Russia shit that happened.
I was. Yes. Yes. I existed on the internet. So yes, it got reflected.
I'm surprised you didn't ask about it, to be honest with you. And if this was your way of asking about it, you did it in such a masterful way that I tip my hat to you, sir.
Well, I wasn't, because it's one of those things where it was like, I felt so, just in seeing what little I did see, where I was like, this isn't even worth, like, knowing you as an individual, I'm like, this isn't even worth my time talking about this or putting any real thought beyond just the fact that, like, oh, Jesse may have said something that ruffles people's feathers and bum people out, but it was probably not, you know, not only not intentional, but not, you know, a holistic view of what Jesse's point was trying to be, you know.
Sure.
So, yeah.
And that was, you know, and there's been a lot of interviews we've wanted to talk about it, and I've said I would rather not, but I will, because we're great friends. But yeah, I mean, I'll give kind of the overview. It was basically like, I got into argument, especially, you know, with the Russian invasion of Ukraine. I got into an argument with people about certain, you know, historical context of things, a lot of which being, I mean, it was a bunch of different topics. You know what I mean? That's the thing. It's like, I talked to people about so many different things, and you know, a lot of people being like, oh, well, you're a communist. Well, Russia is invading Ukraine. How come you're not speaking out against that? I'm like, because Russia is not communist. I don't know why they, you know what I mean? They once used to be, but they are no longer a communist power. So I don't understand what this has. And not only that, like why it started with, why aren't you talking about this? Because apparently a lot of people thought like, oh, you talk about fucking everything, you never shut the fuck up. So why aren't you saying anything about this? And so I avoided it for a long time. And then I finally did. And people didn't really vibe with what it was I was saying. And then it turned into this massive thing that got taken over by one of those like body, like Save Ukraine accounts. That's like really just like one of these accounts that just posts like infographics, and they have like 600,000 followers, but most of them are like bots or whatever. Sure. One of those accounts got a hold of it. And then all of a sudden we just got like a social media flood of like all this shit. And then it ended up actually getting a bunch of shows canceled, like 5 shows canceled. And so, yeah, that was a tough thing to navigate, because again, I don't really see you know, a lot of people were getting upset at me about something that I hadn't even said, or they were getting upset at me about something that I don't even think. And that was the part that I found most frustrating. If you want to be mad about me, if you want to be mad at me about something I actually think, that's a different story. But it's like, if you want to be mad about something that you're just drawing your own conclusion on, then that's, it's a weird position to be in, because I feel like I need to protect myself, but defend myself. But there's such a horde of people coming at you who know nothing about you that it's like impossible to do. So it was like very overwhelming and.
Sure. I'm sure in certain respects, I mean, traumatizing, because it's like you are now at the center of this maelstrom on the internet and you're not even able to talk about it in a meaningful way. It's like, you just have to shut up and take it.
Yeah, no, exactly. And honestly, maybe that's okay sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, maybe
it's a good point.
It's just what needed to happen. You know, and maybe I just need to shut up and take it. But like, you know, it was definitely frustrating, especially like people like think like saying I'm anti-Ukrainian refugee and saying that I'm pro-Putin and all this wacky fucking shit, where I'm just like, I'm very, very loud about what it is I like and what it is I don't like. And you can see it all over my Instagram. You can see it all over my Twitter. Where is there a picture of like a Ukrainian refugee crossed out? Like, this is insane. This is insane to say something like that. Not only that, where is there a Russian flag? Where is there a picture of Putin? You know what I mean? Like, this would be different if you want to come after me about my like support of Cuba. That's different. Fine. But like this, it was just like, that's the whole thing. It was so, it's almost just like, man, you guys had such a shot to try to deplatform me, I guess. And you did it over the dumbest thing. You did it over about something that like I don't even believe in. So it's like, yeah, I felt like it was a wasted shot on their part.
Right.
I knew all I had to do was just like be quiet a little bit more and it would blow over. And sure enough, that's what happened, because a lot of people are like, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to buy this one.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's the, you know, the cycle of rage that exists on the internet is.
Sure. I'm sure that played into my defense as well.
Of course. Yeah, exactly. Where it's just like, all right, well, that's going to be not the issue of the day anymore. And like, especially when there's no there, like you were talking about, where it's like, if I actually believe this and we, you know, we're able to point back to the fact that like, oh yeah, here's this litany of things that Jesse has been posting all over the internet for 10 years. Like, of course we can follow that breadcrumb trail, but it's like, it's not fair. So.
Yeah, exactly. And you see, you kind of see the opposite of that, in fact. And not only that, it's like even what I was trying to say to people, it's like, even if I did believe these things, even if I did, which again, I don't, I'm not pro-Putin and I'm not anti-Ukrainian refugee, which I don't even know, understand why that would be a take that anyone would have. But even if I did believe those things, like in what way is that manipulating you? In what way is that like abusing you? Like, who did I hurt? Who did I abuse? Who did I manipulate? It's like, yeah, I might've hurt someone's feelings with a take that I had. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of people were getting really upset with me over the fact that I said like, hey, there's like mothers who can't get formula for their children in this country, and we're giving $100 billion worth of taxpayer money to missiles. That's probably not a cool idea. You know what I mean? Like, the basic shit like that was getting me into such hot water with like somehow that sentiment is pro Putin. Just simply because I'm not, you know what I mean? It's like, it was such mental gymnastics that I couldn't even, I was like, whoa, this is like, I couldn't even keep up. It was madness. But either way, yeah, you're always going to have to deal with it. I mean, there was a time when I got banned from a venue in Germany for being pro-Palestinian, and it actually ended up leading me into a awesome conversation on Twitter with Talib Kweli and propaganda. It was insane. That kind of shit is always going to happen, where it's like, especially with stick to your guns, like I'm always going to say something that's not popular, or that maybe perhaps could go against a popular narrative, I guess. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. You're going to push the envelope, because that's what you've always, like, you don't know the limit until you reach it. And then it's like, okay, sure. Well, is that limit worth me pushing even farther? Because this is something I actually believe in versus what you encountered, which is literally nothing that's founded in truth.
No, exactly. And I mean, there is also too, like, pick your battles. Like, you don't have to constantly be fighting. You know what I mean?
It's for sure. You don't have the energy for that. Right. Yeah.
It's not, yeah. Like, I don't push the envelope just for the sake of doing it. It's like, okay, well, you know, people are saying this thing is true, and based on my research and things that I have seen, like, that's, this is what I think. That's possibly an alternative to what this is being, what's being said over here. You know what I mean? Like, that shouldn't be a radical viewpoint just to say something, especially something that doesn't hurt anyone, you know? So,
anyway, I appreciate you explaining that. Cause I honestly, like I said, I didn't care about it, but I just cared about not only you as an individual, but just the idea of being wrapped up in something that was so difficult for anybody, regardless of their beliefs, to be, you know, subjugated to that, especially if it is something that is just not founded in truth. So, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
But, Jesse, I love you and I appreciate you hanging out with me. And, yes, we've done this and we'll do it another 10 years where we talk about you even being older, you know? And you're like, hey guys, we're on our 40th tour in Germany. No big deal. It's good.
Absolutely. I would love that. Ray, I love you too, buddy. Thank you so much for having me, man.
Thank you very much to Jesse for hanging out with me for longer than his allotted time as a professional press human being. But shout out to his publicist, Tim, for pulling this together. And anytime I schedule interviews with my friends, I always find it really fun because I feel like a business professional where it's like, yes, let's lock it in on the calendar and do this, even though I could theoretically just text Jesse and he'll be like, oh yeah, dude, I'll come down tomorrow. But it gives it, you know, a veneer of professionality or whatever. So anyways, shout out to both of them. Thank you very much. Next week, I have another awesome live podcast from Outbreak Festival. This one is special to me because these are two young, up-and-coming bands that are at the tip of everybody's tongue. We're talking about New York Times press coverage for some of these bands. So I have Kat from Scowl and Anaya and Dez from Zulu. Dez, I've known for many years just throughout the scene, and I love both Scowl and Zulu. I think they're doing some pretty incredible things as far as hardcore is concerned. So yeah, I had a live conversation with both of them separate times, but obviously I'm combining it for one episode, but very, very fun conversation. So that's what we got next week. And until then, please be safe, everybody. The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids, no plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota bZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.